This story was going to be about a rock star, but it somehow morphed into this, Maluna. Every week, the bald man with gold chains and shiny chestnut skin comes to visit. He wears white robes draped around his swollen belly, sunken chest, and flabby thighs. He sits cross-legged on the mat before me, wheezing between sips of that bitter steaming drink my mother provides. And he says, "Show me how you stand, Maluna. Look at me. The sign, tell me, is it still there?" I shrug, but stand for him as ordered. I give him my solid stare whilst tugging a sleeve from my shoulder. He rises to touch the birthmark, a perfect half moon and 6 raindrops, as if it is worth more than the gold around his neck. As he leaves, 10 priests arrive. They wrap me in silk sheets, anoint me with fragrant oil, and light candles in my honour. They kneel before me, chanting, pressing their foreheads to the floor. Someone plays lilting, hypnotic music. They raise me on a chair to circle the air underneath the ceiling. I am prepared. I've been told that I was special from the age of 3, a goddess, mistress of the moon. We live in a small house made of sticks and manure. My mother cooks sago in a clay pot on a homemade stove. She is like no other female in the hard luck village. She sings while she works. My father whistles as he axes wood. In the evening, he lights small fires in the narrow moat surrounding our dwelling. They keep us warm and repel the wild dogs. Our home is filled with great excitement for my coming of age. I am not allowed to play with other children who gaze at me in silence, then continue on their way. I am indulged instead with sugary foods, dates, and cake made with honey, symbolizing sweetness. I am quenched with water to remind the earth of fertility. I am purified by the smoke of pungent herbs that signify our safety. I stand still for hours as the rays from the sun make the red mountains in the distance tremble in a heat haze, and until the man with gold chains comes to take me away. My hands are shaking. I clutch them behind my back. My knees are weak. I walk slowly, holding my head high. Many people watch me leave. Their silence fills me with dread as I climb into the carriage that is like an ebony egg. Looking through the window, I say goodbye to everything I have ever known. This is my destiny. The crone has told me there is a choice between monsoon rains and parched fields with cracks and craters, either or, feast or famine, and how the fate of the land depends solely upon me. She's recounted stories of gods that glow as if they live inside a candle flame, and others that touch you with an energy that can heal a poor man's soul. She has spoken of heavenly beings hovering above the earth around the village on the day that I was born. I have steeled myself to be ready for this day, an honour for my parents that comes with the relinquishing of all suffering, offerings of cattle, pledges of friendship, presents of potent wines, immortality. I am the owner of a promise that there will be a cloudburst upon the horizon. My body jolts backwards as the donkey pulls me on. They line the dirt tracks, thousands of them, in khaki shorts, loincloths, and brightly coloured clothes. Skinny bodies running out of mud huts, wailing, crying, hurling themselves against the carriage. Hands and wrists come through the window. Fingers like tentacles, reaching, grabbing. I draw back as far as I can. I stretch my headscarf tight across my mouth to muffle my cries. When the opportunity arises, I pull the shutter closed. There is darkness for the rest of the journey, and the weighty world of people sobbing and grinding their bodies against my wooden prison. I am taken to the desert, where I sit upon a stage, grit irritating my lashes, hot winds simmering the blood inside my veins, perspiration trickling beneath my billowing clothes. Sand dunes slowly shift the landscape. They are a mirror for everything. 100,000 people are here, pilgrims from all four corners of my country, sending the sound of my name moaning towards me. Politicians and royalty are invited on the dais, each one crossing my path, stopping for a moment to bend and kiss my feet. After sunset, 100,000 torches, like stars reflected in a shimmering sea, illuminate me. I am aware only of my heart, tremulous as a cat's, and the night, expectant as a prayer. In the morning, I journey to the house by the river with a courtyard and a water pump directly outside its front door. I am to live here with monks, and they will look after me, feed me rice, cassava, plums, mango, and milk made from almonds that they will bring to my lips. I am shown to a bedroom. They let me sleep on a mattress while they sleep on the floor. My days are empty vessels that echo the monotonous sounds of cymbals and drumbeats and voices reciting prayers. I lay watching dust motes swirl in cones of light through the skylights. Sometimes I am called upon to participate in rituals where everyone changes their positions and I am placed firstly over here and then shuffled over there. The spirit of deities haunts me. Fear pumps my heart in anticipation of evenings when I am made to drink an opiate from a jewel-encrusted cup. I dread the sensation of my eyes rolling upwards, strained in their sockets, and hate the visions of hyenas and human carcasses upon the parched, arid land. When the monks ask what I dream, I tell them rain. I am free to commune, but only with nature, to feel the coolness of the river lapping my ankles, or to experience the scent of lotus on the balmy breeze. I meet a boy in the garden under the banyan. His name is Niman. He is 17 and tall, with muscles firm as fleshy coconut that he says are from swimming and working on a farm. He climbs trees as easily as steps to a temple. His eyes are large and wide, and his irises are the colour of cocoa beans. When he talks to me, he looks directly at me like no one before. He dances for me because he says I seem sad. His face is theatre. He makes me laugh. When the monks sleep, I stay awake with thoughts of Niman. He smiles when I touch myself in places that burn. I wonder what it would feel like if my hands were his hands. I imagine his fingers light upon my skin. The next day, he hides behind the banyan. When I walk past, he puts out a hand and grabs me towards him. The shock and the contact make me lightheaded. He holds me, covers my mouth with his lips, and his tongue plays with mine. I can tell you it is I who urges him to go further, manoeuvring our body parts to where they ought to go. I am able to make myself invisible, slipping through cracks in doors and merging with walls. Niman and I meet every day for 2 weeks. On the 15th day, the rains splash down from the heavens. I run into the garden, twist and turn my body and howl with relief. I strip naked, wrap myself in sticky mud, kneel and cake clay into my hair. A young monk runs into the garden, lifts me up like a sacrificial lamb and carries me back to the monastery. I am totally entranced, but even so, upside down, I catch a glimpse of Niman. He is standing beneath the banyan, watching me. He covers his mouth with his hand, lowers his eyes and turns away. That night, I sit on my throne, listening to the whisperings of hymns. The monks give thanks to me, but I am sad. I know that I won't see Naman again. The rains confine me. A woman arrives from the village. The monks are in prayer, and it is I who let her in. She's been walking for 20 days. She is gaunt, tired, and sagging. I take her into the cookhouse, make herb tea for her, and urge her to eat fruit. Your mother is very ill, she says. She's beaded with sweat. She doesn't know what she's saying, and the shit doesn't stop coming out of her. Your father has sent me here to ask the holy men to spare you. If we arrive before she dies, who knows? Maybe you can cure her. The priests hold a meeting in the prayer hall under the observation of precious statues, my predecessors, idols all. The monks and I are not invited. The monks humbly wash and dry the woman's clothes. I prop myself against a wall and wait for 2 hours. The heavy doors open and the priests file out. They discuss the matter with the monks under a roof of umbrellas in the garden before they leave. I am not informed of their decision. The full moon comes and goes. My monthly blood does not flow. I imagine the red mountains of my childhood, blue and bruised now under stormy clouds. I picture my mother on her deathbed, my father no longer whistling. I place myself inside their eerie silence, their void that is me, and I cannot forsake my emotions anymore. I am desperate to go home. 2 days later, the ebony egg arrives. The man with shiny chestnut skin and gold chains descends. He is followed by the crone. I learn that they are man and wife. They wish to talk to me. We convene in the cookhouse because I screamed out in the hall that I no longer wish to sit upon the sacred throne. The crone tries to calm me with a medicinal brew. Maluna, I've known you since you were a child, her husband begins gently. You don't know me. You see me many times, but you don't know me. I fix him with my childhood eyes. Maluna, he goes on, stroking his chin with his manipulative fingers, your mother is no longer with us, and it has been decided by the elders and in agreement with the priests that it is not a good idea for you to return to your birth village. There is disease in every home that could infect even the humours of a goddess. We will bring your father here when the sickness has passed. He will be able to mourn his loss with you. The brew is not working. I feel anger, volcanic anger. I am not a goddess! Look, I say, grabbing a knife and digging it into my flesh. There is satisfaction in the thin scarlet liquid dripping from my arm like tears. I bleed, I feel pain, I age, just like you. I am only a girl from the hard luck village. No, 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 the crone says softly, tearing a bandage from her own clothes. It is usual for a divine messenger to deny their status. It is a rite of passage, believe me, you will see. Can you deny that the rains have come every year since the day you were born? Can you deny the spirit markings on your skin? It's coincidence, I tell her as she dresses my arm. You have a responsibility. You owe it to the people of your country to maintain your role, she says, tossing long white hair over her shoulder, flames flickering in her eyes. And what about me? The more privileged you are, the greater the burden, and you are one of the most privileged, my dear. I cannot listen any more, and storm out of the cookhouse, swiping an earthenware pot off the table as I go. Hurling myself through the front door, I stand for a moment with my bare feet sinking into the waterlogged ground, face to the sky. Then I pace like a cornered animal. My mind is in turmoil. I want to change everything. I have an urge to run like a gazelle across the land, but the banyan is calling me to sit beneath its boughs. Rain has moistened my clothes. They are sticking to my skin. Nevertheless, I go there, sit down with tree roots digging into my buttock bones. I cross my legs and lengthen my spine as I was taught to do. My eyes close. My chin rests on my chest, but I am not sleeping. I do not experience the sensation of being either wet or cold. I am thoughtless. Many images of the universe come to me. I lose myself in dilemmas that affect far-flung reaches of our spinning planet. My spirit merges with humans, birds, beasts, insects, rocks, and plants. I'm not hungry. I feel no need to eat. I feel thirst at times, but have no capacity to drink. I breathe finely and hear my own breath. My heart is a butterfly, and my pulse beats with a steady rhythm. Days fall into the arms of night. Light creeps over the edge into morning many times. I am oblivious to my surroundings, although I have counted 30 days. I see red. Warm liquid seeping between my legs and disappearing into the hungry earth. A warm blanket of air caresses my shoulders. It is no longer raining. I open my eyes and I know what to do. Thank you. Thank you.